My name is Jamie Tang, and I'm a senior from Huron High School. I'm currently the leading organizer of the 3,000-year-old game of Go outside of school. The game was invented over 3,000 years ago in China. It's the oldest game that's been played in the same form. The objective of the game is to surround more territory than your opponent. The opponent who surrounds the most territory wins the game. Due to the 19 by 19 board, there's actually more possible variations in the game of Go than the number of subatomic particles in the universe. So a strong Go player has to be able to balance between playing well locally and also looking at the whole board.
What kind of drew you to it? Did you start playing when you were a child? Or
usually players start playing when they're very young. And like in East Asia, players would start learning around 4 or 5 to study Go full-time and become a professional. But for me, I started learning Go in the summer of 2019. My aunts showed me an anime called Hikaru no Go, and afterwards, I really, really wanted to learn the game.
And would you say that your aunt was kind of... did you have any other teachers besides like your aunt inspiring you to kind of pursue the game?
A few weeks after my aunt introduced me to a game, I had to return to the United States, and my hometown, Ann Arbor, Michigan, is no like Go hub, so I had to self-teach myself for the first year. I wasn't aware of the Go resources, so I learned the classical way of playing online and memorizing game records, and each game has like 300 plus moves, and for a beginner, that was really hard. Like the first game took me 6 months to memorize. And a year later, my rank had improved from 30Q beginner to 7Q. And that was when I started finding a teacher.
What do you mean by memorizing the game?
So one of the ways to improve at Go is that you take a game record of a top professional. It can be a recent one or a classic one. And you just memorize it move by move. And for like strong players, like they can do this like on the first try. It just takes a few minutes. But obviously when you're a beginner, the logic of the moves don't make sense to you. Mm-hmm. So it takes much longer. Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of tell me the logic of the moves like you mentioned?
In Go, there's many things you have to consider just because of how large the board is. The chessboard is 8x8, but Go board is 19 by 19. So, generally, the thought process of when I'm playing a move is the first thing is I look at my own stone, so it's a two-player game. Let's say I'm playing black, I'll see, oh, does black have any weaknesses on the board? If black does, how am I going to fix it? If I have no weaknesses, then I'll move on to step two, where I'll look at my opponent and see if my opponent has any weaknesses. If my opponent has weaknesses, then I need to figure out a reasonable way to pressure them or attack them. And if my opponent is also not weak, then I have to look for the biggest move on the board. And this can be a really hard decision to make.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that kind of after a while you were able to advance to like a more, advanced level of playing Go. Were there any, like what's the difference between a more intermediate player and a more beginner player?
So how Go levels work is the exact same as in karate or taekwondo, is it starts at 30Q, the lowest, and then it goes up to 1Q. And then you have the amateur levels, 1 dan to 7 dan. And then you have the professional levels, 1 professional dan to 9 professional dan. And the difference gets much more clear as you go up. What are some good examples? So for example, I am a 2Q player. So if I'm looking at someone else's game or my own game, I can immediately take a look at the board and kind of know who's ahead. So without counting, I can immediately look at a board and be like, oh, black is probably like 5 to 10 points ahead. If I count clearly, then I'm somewhat accurate. I might be like 2 to 5 points like from the actual like count on a board. Whereas if it was say like a beginner player, they would have no idea if they're winning or losing. Mm-hmm. But let's say that it was a strong amateur player, then when they count, they'll only be like 1 or 2 points off. And in Go, the smallest that you can win by is 0.5.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. What are some traits that you think make a good Go player, and what distinguish these really top Go players from slightly less advanced?
A lot of Go is about humility and patience, but everyone has their own problems. So when someone plays Go, you can really see through them and see what their character is. For example, someone who's, like for me, like inside, I'm naturally really impatient, I'm really ambitious, I have big goals, and I will do everything I can to meet them, and it shows in my game. I'm known for having a more aggressive style, and this was especially prevalent when I was a bit younger and a bit more immature. And for me, like, improving at Go has been about taming in my aggressiveness, not necessarily in telling myself I have to play peacefully, but more so I have to be able to use my aggression to my advantage. I have to develop the timing, the sense of timing of knowing when to attack and when not to attack. And for other players who are more like patient and maybe a little bit more timid, they have to learn how to be a little bit more proactive during the game.
Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned at the beginning that this game has its roots in China, like thousands of years ago, right? So would you say that there's kind of like a cultural aspect to this game as well?
Yes, there's definitely a very rich cultural aspect to it. Currently, the game is primarily played professionally in China, Taiwan, Japan, and Korea. And the game has a lot of rich history in it, especially during World War II. So initially during that time, Japan dominated the Go world. They had the most money, they were doing the most well economically, and the most famous Go player that we know in history would be Go Seigon. He was a Chinese citizen, and he moved to Japan to play professionally. And he was growing up during World War I and World War II. And while living in Japan, he was constantly receiving death threats to him and his family. And Go Seigon, because of the brilliance of his Go, he served as a cultural bridge between two countries at war. And this was very difficult for him, since to be able to do well in the Go game, you need to be able to put your worries aside and focus on the game. And this was what Go Seigon did.
Mm-hmm. Can you kind of tell me a little bit more about what you're doing with Go right now, in terms of like organizing events and all the things that you do?
For me, I've been very fortunate to have a lot of connections to the best Go players in like North America and beyond. In 2023, I attended my first US Go Congress. That's an annual week-long national Go event organized by the American Go Association. And at that event, I met my Go teachers in person, and I won this poetry contest. And this brought me to the attention of Albert Yin, Eitan, and he's one of the top amateur Go players in the world. He invited me to help organize his FCN Go Club's tournaments. And since then, I've become the president of the American Go On Society. That's the youth-led organization. I've also co-founded the American Collegiate Go League, where I'm the organizing director, and I also lead the organization. And I have also become the Evanston Go Club's outreach director, which is responsible for organizing the largest Go tournaments in the country.
Kind of building off that last question, what kind of work do you do as the leader of all these different organizations?
My main responsibility is delegating tasks and training new members of our team. With the American Go Honor Society, that role is more straightforward, since it's been done in a similar structure since its founding in the early 2000s. In the American Go Honor Society, I lead a team of 11 young people between the grades of 8th grade to 12th grade. I make sure that they know their responsibilities and that they have the skills and resources they need to fulfill their task.
Mm-hmm. And do you notice a lot more young people joining the game of Go these days?
During the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a spike in the number of youth Go players, simply because of like the pandemic. They had nothing to do, and Go was this really accessible game during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. In what ways was it accessible? Were there efforts being made to make it more of a widespread thing during the pandemic?
Go is very accessible in the sense that it doesn't require, say, like a bowl, like in sports, but rather you can easily play the game online on online Go servers. So there were many online youth tournaments and events for youth Go players.
Mm. And maybe kind of to wrap things up, what does Go mean to you as like a person? What are some things that maybe you've learned because of Go, or things that you've experienced because of Go and you think are somehow valuable in your life?
The most beautiful aspect of Go is its simplicity. It's a game that people of all ages and all levels can enjoy. In my role, I see it as my responsibility to help share the beauty of Go and encourage others to hold on to their love for the game.
Mm-hmm. And have you learned anything specifically in about yourself, maybe, through playing Go?
Yes, so I lost my brother when he passed away from like a car accident back in 2016. And since I want to take care of my family, I never grieved for him. And the COVID-19 pandemic reminded me of my memories of my brother. And that was around the time when I started learning Go, and Go helped give me an escape from the things that I was thinking about. And additionally, Go also introduced me to a lot of people that have been very supportive in my life, like many of my Go teachers and mentors that have assisted in my college applications and my homework and other aspects of my life.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of This Person I Met, and I hope you enjoyed. I'm planning on starting a series relating to school and the experiences/difficulties of educators in the public school system, so be on the lookout for the next few episodes. Thank you again for your continuous support.